Thailand's elections ended yesterday without any apparent major incidents of violence, even though anti-government protesters stopped candidates from registering, blocked delivery of ballot boxes, and prevented people from casting their votes. For more than 3 months, protesters have shut down the government district in Bangkok and other parts of the capital. Protesters are pledging more demonstrations as Thailand's political crisis continues to grow. Reynold Nesiba is professor of economics at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. He spent January in Thailand, where he led a study abroad J-term course on the political economy of Thailand. And he joins us now from our studios at the University of Sioux Falls for some background on what's going on in Thailand. And Reynold, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Really flattered to be here. Thank you for the invitation, Carl.
Well, in reading about the conflict, there's a couple of descriptions that I've come across. One is that this is sham government versus undemocratic opposition, or crony populists versus establishment thugs. How would you describe the conflict and what's happening in Thailand?
Yeah, it is difficult for us to imagine an election being scheduled and people who call themselves the People's Democratic Reform Committee actually disrupting the election, making it so people can't file to run for office, or actually engaging in physical violence to prevent people from engaging in early voting. So there really are two main groups in Thailand, and the problem is the group that has the in some ways the most power hasn't been able to win an election since 1992. And that would be a group that's largely aligned with the military, with the party there that's called the Democrat Party, and tends to be supported by mostly by people who live in Bangkok. They're higher educated, higher income people, and they're really frustrated that they haven't been able to win an election for so long. And they see the elected government of Yingluck Shinawat as simply representing corruption. So the one group on one side, until a few months ago, we were, and some news media still refer to them as sort of the yellow shirts. I think that's simple enough for us to think about this group that's aligned with the military and the educated and those living in Bangkok versus what's the UDD or the red shirts, which tend to be the north and northeast part of the country. They tend to be rural, tend to be lower educated, have lower income, but also have majority power, and have won a party associated with that group has won every election since 2001.
And that's the Shinawat family. Let's go back to 2001.
Right. So in 2001, Thaksin Shinawat, who was a billionaire, who ran on a really populist platform to provide more credit assistance to farmers out in rural regions, to put together a universal health care scheme to provide medical care for people. And that was viewed by the opposition as engaging in vote buying. And he was... And so he won the election in 2001. There was another election that he won in 2005. But in 2006, when he was out of the country, there was a coup and he was ousted, and he's been in self-imposed exile since 2008.
And now his sister is the prime minister.
Right. And so his sister was just elected on July 1st of 2011. And I happened to be there for a couple of months that summer as well, just as she was coming into power. She, too, has continued to try to reach out to support provide policies to the people that helped brought her to office. So she put together you might think of it as a farm bill of sorts for people in Thailand that really paid rice farmers a premium for the rice. And the hope for Yingluck was that Thailand was the biggest exporter of rice in the world. The hope was that they could pay a premium to farmers, hold back on their sales internationally, and allow the global prices of rice to go up, and then sell that rice into that market and be able to actually make money on this and to reward her constituents. What she didn't foresee was that India decided it would be a great time to really open up their exports, and they flooded the market, and the global price of rice fell, and now they're billions of baht behind, and so now Yingluck is also being accused on an impeachable offense, actually, for not monitoring the finances related to her rice scheme.
Well, going back to the elections yesterday, Yingluck Shinawat, she called these snap elections, and then the anti-government, the yellow shirts were pretty much against this because they knew they were going to lose anyway.
Right, and that's their frustration, is that the PDRC, the People's Democratic Reform Committee, which is headed by this guy named Sutep, who used to be the deputy prime minister under a guy under Abhisit back in 2008, 2009, 2010. That they knew that if the election went ahead, that there was no way they could win. So instead, they came out and opposed it. And it's interesting. Most of the news stories that are covering this say that the recent protests were really sparked in November by Yingluck's support of an amnesty bill. And the amnesty bill would have granted amnesty to her brother, so it would have allowed Thaksin to return. But many of the news stories don't cover is that this amnesty bill also would have applied to Abhisit and to Sutep, who are both wanted for murder because there were 90 casualties. Most outside observers see it as the military firing on red shirt protesters in 2010. And nobody has been charged with any of those crimes. And so I think what Yingluck was trying to do was to pass a bill that in many ways was offensive to everybody, but was really grabbed onto by the opposition, and they've rallied around it to say, no, we must end this Shinawat family, we must get them out of the country, and we need reform before we can have an election. And so the Democrat Party has refused to participate in this election that happened on Sunday.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Professor Reynold Nesiba of Augustana College. He spent January in Thailand. We're talking about the political crisis there in Thailand. He was in Thailand leading a study abroad, a J-term course on the political economy of Thailand. Now one thing that I don't read that much in these articles and discussions of what's going on in Thailand is the role of the monarchy.
That is a really interesting question that you bring up. Thailand has a law that has gone back a long time, but it's really been enforced in the last 10 years with far more vigor, called lese majesty, which makes it a crime, and you can be sentenced for anywhere from 3 to 15 years for every count if anyone says anything that is interpreted as injurious to the monarchy or the royal family. And so it's impossible to have an honest and frank conversation in Thailand given that law, because one cannot discuss the king. All we can do for the most part is wish him a long life. And so there is speculation that and some have talked about a relationship between the monarchy and the military that does seem to be supportive of the PDRC. So one possible scenario here would be, and the king has in the past sometimes intervened in these political crises, if the king would come forward and bring both members, bring opposite parties together, or to come forward and say respect the vote, that would be one way out of this crisis. I, for a whole variety of reasons, don't expect that to happen.
Now, he's ailing, what, 86 years old?
Right, the longest-serving monarch in the world at the moment, I think. So he has been on the throne since the 1940s. He was born in Boston and raised by his mother in Switzerland. And there's an interesting book out there called "The King Never Smiles" that one can read about. Just don't take it to Thailand with you, because it's a banned book and would be a violation of lese majesty.
Now, When you were in Thailand last month, how much of what's going on there, how much of that were you aware of? Is the country just is it still running? Are things happening? Are people in the streets? Do you notice what's going on?
It's an enormous country, and Bangkok is an enormous city. So there were protests going on while we were there. The biggest one started really the day after we took a train to go north to the northern large city of Chiang Mai. But the city, this is a country that has had 18 successful coups since 1932. And so I remember a year ago when I was leading this course, Napisa, who's a professor associated with the Institute of Southeast Asian Affairs, which is based at Chiang Mai University, you know, she walked in the room and simply asked the question, how many constitutions does your country have? You know, we've had 18. So the it's a country that has learned to role with this ongoing unrest. There was a disruption in the early part of the 2000s where the airport was shut down, and I think that protesters on both sides realized that that was a bad idea. This is a country where somewhere between 6% to 10% of GDP is really generated by from tourism. Tourism is down, and this is a really critical time because this is Chinese New Year. As China continues to build its middle class and upper middle class, Thailand has become an important tourist destination for them. And there's many cancellations here for February and March for this celebration of the Chinese New Year.
So the instability and violence is it's tough on the economy.
It is going to be tough on the economy, both for tourism and also for new. Thailand has been a recipient of a lot of direct foreign investment, particularly from Japan over the last couple of decades. Many new automobile plants that have been erected south of Bangkok. It's one of the world's biggest producers of disk drives, and the disruption of Bangkok does disrupt transportation there as well, and does make exports makes it harder to get some of those things out. And that instability, as I said, is probably its biggest negative effect is on tourism and on future direct foreign investment.
Now, the protests, the demonstrations that have been going on in Bangkok, at least since November, what has been the mood? Have these been violent protests? What's been happening?
Well, and some of them have there have been fatalities and there have been bombs thrown, but much of the protest, I know there was a New York Times article of a few weeks ago that actually characterized the protest as being festive or having a circus atmosphere. You know, the food vendors move closer to the protest areas so they can provide food and drink and sell ice cream to those who are spending their days shutting down the major intersections, and so most of them have been peaceful. But this is a nation. We shouldn't forget. I mean, this is a nation, I think, really on the cusp of a civil war and trying to figure out how to move forward. And Sunday's election doesn't give us a way out of that, right? That the protesters were successful in ensuring that even when these votes are counted, that they aren't going to have the 475 seats in the legislature needed to have a quorum to select a new prime minister. So it's going to be weeks before additional elections are held. And it seems really ripe for another coup, either a military coup, which won't happen probably this week because U.S. military is engaged in Cobra Gold, which is their ongoing military exercises that they work with Thailand. But once the U.S. Military, thousands of our troops are out of there, I think you could see either the judicial, there's a national anti-corruption committee that is doing investigations of Yingluck on several charges. One, that that the amnesty bill was flawed, that her support for the direct elections of senators was problematic, and then actually this impeachable offense for her rice scheme. And if that happens, the way the Thai government works is that if somebody in your party is found guilty of corruption, not only do you get removed from office, but your political party is disbanded and not allowed to run anyone in an election for the next 5 years.
Now, you mentioned the U.S. government. What is the current U.S. foreign policy regarding Thailand?
Yeah, and this is a problem. U.S. policy, Obama has announced, you know, a pivot toward Asia, that after his reelection, one of the first places he went in the world was to visit Thailand and to visit Burma, and to reaffirm that U.S. policy is to support democracies in Southeast Asia, and in part that we want more friends there that border China. And we continue to say that we want to support democratic institutions in Thailand. The problem is that most of our aid and assistance is going directly to the military, and Thailand's military has had little or no interest in actually defending democracy in Thailand. And so I worry that American foreign policy is actually making the conditions in Thailand worse than they would otherwise be.
You mentioned that you see Thailand on the cusp of a civil war. Is there any solution to the political crisis that would avoid a civil war?
Well, Paul Chambers, who's at the Institute of Southeast Asian Affairs, also at Chiang Mai University, and one of our guest lecturers and somebody who I'm proud to call a friend, he's talked about various ways of trying to imagine ways out of this, and that, you know, if there is sort of more support for Thaksin that or the Shinawat family, that just isn't going to be acceptable to the PDRC. If the PDRC wins, that isn't going to be acceptable to the red shirts and people who are loyal to the Shinawat family. I don't think that the monarch is going to intervene in a way like he has in the past to sort of scold both sides and tell them to respect the right of the people to vote. And so Dr. Chambers has postulated that maybe what you need to move toward is more autonomy for the various regions. You know, could you allow the North and Northeast to engage in more control of what they want to do? There have been several provinces in the far south that have had an ongoing conflict that's partly a Muslim-Buddhist conflict that's been unstable for decades, really. Is there a way that Thailand could move toward a looser federation of semi-autonomous areas and still allow Thailand to hold together and function as a nation? That might be one way out.